Dave Banning on 2FM.
Describe Dawn O'Porter, broadcaster, columnist, Stephen, wife of Chris O'Dowd, if you like. But what you might not be as much aware of is that she's also an acclaimed writer of teen fiction. Her first novel, Paper Airplanes, has been nominated for the 2014 Waterstones Children's Book Prize. And her second novel, Goose, which is a follow-up, just came out this week. Well, tonight she's doing an event at the Twisted Pepper in Dublin, where she'll be in conversation with journalist Anna Carey. But with that event all sold out, she's kindly dropped by to have a chat with us first of all. You're very welcome to the programme. Good morning, Dawn. I'm sure there's a joke there somewhere with the words like good morning, Dawn, but I won't even try. First of all, Dawn, congratulations on making the shortlist for the Waterstones Children's Book Prize. Were you expecting Paper Airplanes, your first novel, to be so well received? Are you that sort of egotistical? You say, of course I was.
No, I wasn't. And I was actually, I was nervous because I didn't want to be seen as just someone, another person off the telly that got a book deal. And there was a little bit of that before Paper Airplanes came out. So to be nominated by Waterstones just felt like, oh, they're taking me seriously as a fiction writer. So it was, I feel like I broke through that kind of girl off telly.
Sure, but wasn't the writing stuff the stuff you had been doing first anyway?
Yeah, it was. I was always a writer in the first place. I remember sending a comment off to a paper when I was about 16 and they printed it and I went to school the next day. I'm a published writer. And it always gave me a lot more of a thrill than TV. I kind of fell into TV a bit by accident. But so now I feel like I'm back doing what I always wanted to do.
Right, indeed. Okay, well, first of all, why teen fiction?
I mean, that was a bit of an accident, I have to say. I was about to start writing a novel about a friendship, two women in their 30s, and then I got a call from a teen fiction publisher and they asked me if I wanted to write a book for them. And so I said,
listen, here's a publisher, so I'll tell you, I'll make them half the age.
Well, that is what happened. So then I could do exactly the same story but them at 15, but now I'm doing the series of books and they'll end up in the fourth one in their 30s. So I just kind of did the prequel, really.
Okay, well, like, was it a story you particularly really felt you wanted to tell? Was there something you wanted to get out? Was there something cathartic? Were there skeletons in the cupboard? I've done it.
One of the characters, Renee, her family setup is very similar to mine. So there was a lot of me kind of getting my childhood out onto the page.
Yeah.
Like, I lost my mum when I was 7 and she did too. And so there was some of that. And it was definitely a cathartic experience. But it's also, I just wanted to write friendship like a love story because I think it can feel like that sometimes.
Okay, you lost your mother when you were 7. I get the impression from you, from everything you've done in the past, that this is the single most important driving thing in your life.
I just don't see how it can't be. I think it happened at that age where I was old enough to understand exactly what was going on, but young enough to completely build it into my life and for it not to feel like a tragedy at this point in my life. But it definitely gives you that drive. You know, she was a year older than I am now when she died. It's extraordinary to think that. So it gives you this, I will not, no matter what age I am when I die, not have achieved all my dreams type way of living your life, which is, you know, I think quite a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the new book, Goose, is just out this week. It's a follow-up to Paper Airplanes. The girls are now very old. They're 18. Did you always plan on writing a sequel? And can we expect more? Is this the first of many? Is this a start of a huge, big Hollywood something or other?
I always knew there was going to be at least two, and the publisher has just bought the next two. So at the moment, the next book after this, they'll be in their 20s. The one after that, they'll be in their 30s. And then ideally, I'm still going to be writing about these girls when they're all grannies. But I have to have lived that experience before I can write it, I think.
Okay, now you were going to start them at a certain age and you've halved the age in order to get that start because you were offered by a publisher. But have you found that a lot of women in their 20s and 30s frequently read teen or young adult fiction?
They do. I think the thing is with these books as well, because they're set in the 90s, they're quite nostalgic. So actually it's really struck a chord with women in their 30s. Even though it's set at that time, I just think they're very real feelings for anyone that was a teenage girl, rather than whether you're a teenage girl in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s or now. I think they're quite universal coming of age things that the girls are dealing with. So it's been, I don't have a teenage audience and I've had to try and get one with these books.
Yeah.
So I do think the majority of people so far that have read the books have been around my age. But I've been on book tour for the last week and lots of teenagers are starting to turn up and it's a very new audience for me. They're so sweet. Sometimes so nervous and I don't know what to say. Like, one girl was so nervous that she couldn't speak and I was like, it's all right, I'm not Harry Styles.
Right.
Or Niall, I should say.
Yeah, or Niall Horan, I suppose, or something, yeah. Okay, I bet you couldn't name the other three, could you?
Zane
Louis, Malik, Louis Tomlinson.
And the other one, Liam Payne.
Liam Payne, well done.
I like his speaking voice.
Oh yeah,
I think he's got a.
Have you seen the movie?
Voice.
Have you?
I have.
Yeah, I've seen it a bunch of times.
So
they came
well.
Across. Harry, in particular, there's one scene he's out in a field and he's talking about where he first kissed a girl down there. But the important thing, he's talking about fame, and he like I think it's actually really good.
I know. Well, you know what? I know Harry, and they're really good boys.
Oh, right. Okay. They're, one so up on me.
Well, I
know
Harry. I don't know him anymore since he's got so famous. But they're really good boys. They've all got their feet on the ground, and I know lots of people that know them, and you know they really seem to not be changing. And I don't know why I'm suddenly talking about One Direction. But, you know, I guess everyone.
Well, I might as well go in that direction. Okay, listen, your mother, you say then, to go back to something you said, died of cancer when you were just 7. I know that it's something that informs everything you do, but does it actually play on your mind, especially since you're now around that age?
Yeah, I think about it all the time.
Do you?
I think about it all the time. I relentlessly try and remind women to check their own boobs because I just think it's, with breast cancer specifically, it's one of those cancers where... I think it's something crazy like 80% of breast cancers are found by self-examination. And I did a book last year called The Booby Trap.
The Booby Trap, yeah.
I got as many well-known women as possible to write something about their boobs from any time in their life.
And a good 60% were funny?
Yeah, most of them were funny. I mean, boobs are funny. But one thing that happened, having written that book, I received this extraordinary email from a woman who said that she saw the book advertised, she bought the book, she's a mother of two. Her kids were playing, watching the TV one day, and she went for a shower and thought, after reading the book, I'm going to go and check my boobs. She found a lump and had stage 3 breast cancer.
Right.
Went to the doctor the next day, and she wrote to me to say, this isn't me exaggerating, that book saved my life, because I didn't know that I had cancer, and it could have been weeks before that had turned into stage 4 and there would have been no going back. It reminded me that we have to just keep telling women that it's so important. So I know it's important for me, but, you know, cancer doesn't discriminate. And I've met 23-year-old girls with no cancer in the family who have been diagnosed with it. So I just try and say it out loud as much as possible. Fill your boobs!
And it's a pretty damn simple thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and there's no excuses, really.
Exactly. Just in the shower, couple times a week.
Okay, now, another thing is that you were robbed of having memories of your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of a side sort of road of the exact same thing I mentioned earlier on? Just that you don't have that, and you almost are reacting angrily against that sort of stuff that was stolen from you, if you like.
It's a real frustration that you know that the most important person in your world is a child. You can't actually remember her properly.
Yeah.
It's very stressful, and I think for some people it might come out as anger. For me, it came out with maybe just desperately trying to get attention and be noticed, and that was kind of my character trait that came out of this loss, I think. And it is really frustrating. I had a really strange relationship at school with friends who were very close to their mothers. I couldn't understand that relationship at all, so I kind of would actively seek out and be comforted by people who didn't. And that's what Paper Airplanes and Goose is about. It's two girls that can't rely on their mothers, and that means that they're certain kinds of people. I think a lot of people take for granted the fact they have that one person in life where it's just this unconditional love.
Of course.
And when it's snatched from you as a child, it makes you quite insecure. I love it when my family talk about her. I love looking at pictures of her. I know there's some video footage somewhere and I have never watched it because I think that might send me over the edge, maybe one day, but I do try and, you know, make her a part of my life as much as possible.
Do you remember her?
I remember things like her red nails and the smell of Chanel No. 5, and I remember her, me having a nap on the sofa and her coming in and her face being really cold, but her giving me a cuddle. I put all this stuff into the books. It's more kind of sensory memories that I have. I don't remember the sound of her voice. That really irritates me. And I don't remember enough. I probably remember 5 minutes of her. If I was to sit down and think, it would be a total of 5 minutes, which is really... It's not fair.
Okay, your parents divorced when you were about 1 or 2 and you went to live elsewhere. The elsewhere was Guernsey and you were in school and had friends. You still go back. Those friends are important to you.
They are. My aunt and uncle, and my dad lives up in Scotland, who is my best friend in the world. I love him. But I was actually raised by my aunt and uncle in Guernsey, my mum's brother. And I still go back and see my school friends now. They're great. Guernsey's one of those places that just stays the same. It will always be home. And we go back and we go for dinner and we probably talk in a similar way than we did when we were 15.
Yeah,
it's really lovely.
You've married a man from County Roscommon. Preconceived ideas about marriage beforehand and they have been completely shattered or they've been completely realised?
I was just not one of those women who was bothered about it. I didn't have that dream. So I wasn't...
But were you anti it?
I wasn't... It wasn't... I would say, I guess at some points in my life, I was probably anti it. I think I went in different stages, but I definitely wasn't. If Chris and I had never gotten married, I don't think that would have bothered me. I wasn't waiting for a proposal.
Yeah.
I was anti the idea of getting married in church. I didn't want to do that because I thought that would go against my own personal beliefs.
Yeah.
And luckily I married someone who was really open to how I wanted to do things, and we found a great compromise with our wedding. That was one of the reasons I think that I didn't want to get married. I am blown away by how much I love being married. It just is a big... you realise how much in a relationship you say if, and when you get married you just say when.
Right.
And it's lovely.
Yeah.
And almost instantly you just feel like such a team.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will
all
last.
The worry and the doubt is gone. It's,
yes.
it's a reality, so let's move to the next
step
now, please.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't take you just presume that you're going to be together in 20 years so you can actually make solid plans.
You know, I knew your husband before you did.
Well, that's very likely.
Yeah, I actually met him. It's a bizarre thing, actually. Only about 2 years ago, we were doing a thing where he was launching Moonboy for Sky, and I was doing the kind of MC thing. And he came up to me afterwards, and he said, hello, and how are you? And that's, by the way, thanks for the lift. I was going, what is he on about? It turns out that about 20 years ago, I was interviewing Richard E. Grant or somebody in University College Dublin in front of a lot of people, one of those public interview things. And he was involved with the dram sock there or something along those lines.
Right.
And it was his job to bring me out to my car,
really?
Which I don't believe for a moment. Nobody ever brought me to my shagging car. Anyway, so I go out to the car with him and I say, so you go back in now, listen, thanks a million. I didn't even ask his name, sorry, blah, 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 just talking to him. And he said, no, I was going to go to town. So I'm going to town, hop in. I gave him a lift into town. And I didn't know this till about 2 years ago since he told me.
How funny.
That happened about 20 years ago. So tell Chris Day Fanning said hello.
I will do. He's actually told me about you before. He's a big fan.
Oh, really? Oh, is he? Right. Oh, he's got very good taste then. Okay, now, let me just take a look then at some of the stuff from the past that you might or might not have done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nightmare on Albert Square. Sorry to bring this one up for a second, okay? Sorry, I just want
to... How did you hear that?
Okay. I know Chris. He tells me everything.
I just can't believe you just said that. That's such a blast from my childhood. That was my first story that I ever wrote.
Yeah, and after that story was what? Read by your father in front of the family you knew?
My sister read it out at the wedding. She'd kept it. It was written on paper in this awful handwriting, and it was about how Doc Cotton got taken up by aliens.
Aliens, yeah. And this was like you then knew what your future was going to be.
That was it. I was a writer from the start.
But did you know that when it came past the writing, and then I went into all the TV stuff you've done, which is like, you know, investigating free love and going gay, and I'm going to try this now. A vajacial.
I did an article about vajacials.
Okay, fair enough.
I never actually got one.
Okay. Going, I don't even know what I want to know. Okay, size zero, bottom wiping habits and all the rest of it.
All that.
I mean, like,
sometimes
in one
we just
way,
have to do things for money.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, they are the kind of programs, like, you know, oh, there's nobody left. Oh, look, Don will do it.
I think possibly you'd be amazed what I said no to. I think people would always be amazed to hear the no list. I do think that's... I came up with most of them, so I can't really say that. I was, in my 20s, I was willing to do anything. I don't really do those kind of TV shows anymore because I'm a little bit tamer, I think. But it was fun. It was a fun to have a time in life where you were just willing to do anything. Like the Free Love one and stuff like that was... It was really fun. I lived on in Germany with in a camp full of hippie free lovers. I mean, what an experience. I loved it.
And going naked on programmes and
going
stuff like
naked
that.
On programs.
Too,
that was one of the first ones that I did. Yeah, that was terrifying. But also a great thing to do. Like, once you've gone naked on television, imagine all the inhibitions that you lose.
Absolutely. All in one programme. By the way, speaking of one programme, do you often make a programme and do a whole thing and think, right, that's it. It's just like you've written an article and there it gets printed. And then suddenly there's about 1,000 people have to work on it and do things to it and you see it and you go, wait a minute now.
Oh, totally. That's why writing's the best job in the world.
Yeah.
I love TV, but I don't get that same sense of this is coming from me. You know, I do my job and then directors, producers, editors, people at the network, all these people interfere with it by the time it gets on the screen. And I'm the one who has to hold my head up and walk down the street and be recognised from these shows. And a few times in my career, I haven't been proud of what's been put on.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating and it's embarrassing. And with writing, that doesn't happen. Like, I'll give my first draft to my editor she'll make suggestions and I do or do not do them. Mostly, you know, they correct my spelling and make suggestions that I can do or not. And I think it's so much more freeing. I actually feel like I'm, what I'm putting out there into the world is coming from me. And actually, it means that accepting criticism is a lot easier when you know that it's nobody else's fault. Like, if I get a bad review for my book, I'm like, okay, fine, I can take that. When I get a bad review for TV shows and I think it might be because of somebody else's input, I get... That's just not a good feeling.
And might it be possible that what we're talking about here in terms of these books, might there be a screen ending to them?
Like, there might be. I mean, I think I've got another two to write in the series, and I think the fourth one is probably the movie out of all of them. Someone suggested yesterday that I do it as a play, Paper Airplanes as a play, and I thought that was such a lovely idea. I probably won't write it. So if anybody wants to write Paper Airplanes to play, do get in touch.
Okay, Dawn O'Porter. By the way, the O Porter, is that just taking a little bit of Chris's name, one letter of it, and not taking the rest of it?
Yeah, it's official. It's on my passport. It's it was never an option for me to be Dawn O'Dowd. I just, the idea of changing my name just didn't make sense to me at all.
Dawn O'Dowd, never thought of it. Actually.
Mrs. O'Dowd is my mother-in-law, you know, it's not me. And yeah, I think Chris felt the same way. But I wanted to do something, and I thought it happened around the time that Paper Airplanes was, we were doing the cover, and I had to make that decision.
Yeah.
And we mocked up two covers, Dawn Porter and Dawn O'Porter. And I just thought O'Porter looked really good, so that was it. I just went with it and then just did my passport, and now it's happened.
Okay, now it's happened, and now you are happily married as Dawn O'Porter. Are you happily married and happy to be happy about marriage? Now, if you know what I mean. Like, for instance, you might have had reservations before, or didn't think about it enough before, or wasn't into it enough before, or didn't think it needed to be something you needed to worry about before. But the actual thing, you're not just happy to be married, you'd almost be, not a crusader for the institution, but I mean, you'd... Thumbs up.
Definitely thumbs up from me. I'm definitely, you know, but I try not to be one of those women who's now saying to my single friends, oh, you should get married, because I think it is a very personal thing. And but no, I definitely am very surprised at how much I like being married. And I don't mean as terms of my relationship.
Yeah.
I just mean of what it did to me as a person. It made me feel incredibly whole and incredibly secure. And you don't realise how insecure you are until you get married.
Well, Dawn, do you have any top tips for all the single ladies out there? Shut up, Dave.
God, I don't know. Tips for single ladies. I mean, I was just relentless. I just dated loads. I had a great time. So just get out there. My husband will be thrilled to hear that, I'm sure. But yeah, I think the worst kind of single to be is to sit and wait for Mr. Right or Mrs. Right to walk in the door. And the best thing you can do is be proactive and just get meeting people. I love internet dating. I thought it was brilliant.
Just meet as many people as possible.
Meet as many people as possible.
Now, let's get into the darker side of things for a second, because you went through a dark period in your life a few years back. You said you were depressed, you'd hit rock bottom. What was going on and what pulled you out of the darkness?
I kind of got a slightly misquoted on the word depressed. I don't use the word depressed or depression lightly at all. I was a victim of circumstance. I was very sad. I wallowed and I got myself in just very upset because my career wasn't really going anywhere. But I know people with depression and it's a very different thing.
Right. Yours was just a bit of a downer.
I just had a downer for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly ambitious and I wasn't achieving what I wanted to achieve, and it really got me down. I was just very frightened. A series that I did for Channel 4 didn't get recommissioned. I lost a weekly column that I was writing that really was the only thing that I had. And I just really let that affect my confidence. And to be honest, when I look back on it, I'd stop trying as well, because I think when you feel sad and insecure, you don't have the confidence which you have to have in this career to go out and get work. And as soon as I got that call from that publisher, you know, I was toying with the idea of writing this book about these two women in their 30s, and Chris was filming in Montreal. I was going to go and write this treatment, but I didn't have a publisher. Out of the blue, got this call from this publisher. Someone just put that little bit of confidence back in me again. I got the deal for Paper Airplanes and everything changed. It was, for me, being in Hollywood and not having an answer to the question, what do you do, which I didn't feel like I did. And as soon as I could say I'm an author and feel valuable in a room full of brilliant, talented people, everything changed for me. It's important for me to be successful and to achieve. And I just wasn't.
You're not going to bring out a 12-step program book on how to self-help by Christmas, are you?
Really not. I'm always anti-self-help. I don't read any of those books. I'm not really into any of that stuff. I think you have down times in life and then you pick yourself up again. And I got out of my period of sadness just by getting a kick up the arse and working again. I'd stopped working, and that's why it happened.
Okay, well, like we mentioned Chris earlier on, Chris O'Dowd, as in Moon Boy, as in Bridesmaids, as in loads of other stuff in terms of Hollywood, etc. He's doing pretty damn well, isn't
he? He's doing so well. And you know what? Right now, he's on Broadway doing Of Mice and Men in New York, and I am not sure. Moon Boy is a different thing. He's so happy when he's doing Moon Boy because that's here, and it just is. But yeah. I've never seen him in another job so fulfilled and so happy. I get a text message most mornings just saying, I love my job. I've never heard him say that before, apart from Moon Boy. When you do a play, I think when you do a film, there's a lot of waiting around. The actual process can be boring and a bit unfulfilling, and you feel like it's very slow. And I think he feels a lot of the time like he's not challenged. Thing is, when you're doing a play, you have to work so hard. You can't just turn up and pull it off. He's put so much into this character. He's taken on quite a physical transformation. He's gone completely bananas on his acting choices, and he's brilliant. And for that reason, he feels slightly out of his depth and therefore really happy and challenged and satisfied. It's really lovely. And I think when you sign up to do a long run on a play, you're either going to have a great time or a terrible time. And thank God he's having a brilliant time.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It really is. Yeah. You know, I mean, in comparatively speaking, a movie's got to be easier, even if it's more boring.
I mean, I guess so. But I think with acting, if you really feel like you're the character, which he does with this one, he really has taken on this character and made it his own, then I think you have a great time. I think with acting, you'll get into character and then it's like, cut, and then you have to go and see the trailer for three hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to get back into character again. It's all very stoppy-starty, just literally the process. The best thing about acting for a lot of people who work in movies is the payoff.
Okay, listen, you can tell me to get lost with this question, but I'm going to ask the obvious one because I'm going to say, your Guernsey friends might ask you this. What about the pitter-patter? Okay, that's the first one. Are you going to have kids? Okay.
You're asking me nervously. I get so angry. You probably read this.
No, I didn't realise you get angry.
I think it's a really natural question to ask, and I totally understand why people do. But I get slightly shirty about the baby question because Chris could do 7 interviews on the trot and not once even get asked about me.
I'll ask him. I swear to God, if I ever interview him, I'll ask him.
This is what Amy Huberman and I talk about this a lot because she has a very similar thing. As a girl, and I know you're a guy, so it's very different interview, and for me, I do a lot of interviews, and it's like question number 2.
Really?
But I've got 2 books and a TV series coming out in the next month. Why are you caring about that?
Am I holding one of your babies in my hand?
My book's right now.
This is called Goose, Don O'Porter. Right, okay, fair enough.
Rant over.
Jeepers, rant over indeed, from you or me. Anyway, just the crazy programmes then, finally, that you've done throughout the years, Don. Like, I mean, does anything specifically stick out? Does anything that could give a second or third or fourth series that you'd like to do more of?
Well, I've just got a series coming out in a couple of weeks about vintage clothing. It's very different from what I used to do, but it's a 6-parter for Channel 4, massive passion project for me, trying to get people off the high street, spending so much money on crap clothes that they'll never wear, and just trying to... the whole point of it, it's not one of those makeover shows where I wear Spanx and change your hair. It's just find clothes that represent your personality. It's really fun. It starts in May.
Okay, we look out for that in May. Now, you are quite active on Twitter, and I read somewhere that you recently got an awful lot of flack from people online about your appearance after you went on 8 out of 10 Cats. Now, the point is, I just asked a question that, like, you know, why is it blah, 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 blah? It's also, why is it that, like, you know, if my hair, the little bit I have left, was out of place, nobody would give 2 tuppence about it on the thing? Does this... really get you?
It really gets me because it's very unfair, and women have a difficult time being on TV, especially when they're shoehorned into male formats where the only thing to really comment on is the way that she looks. And I just think it's, you know, the BBC has just put out a statement saying that it's unacceptable not to have women on panel shows, and they're going to make sure there's one.
That's not the answer. No, I don't think
it is. The answer is that the commissioners need to be braver, and men can have the panel shows. I don't want to go on them. Women don't want to. We feel like we're representing, but that's what happens when we go on. It's not the guys on the show that's the problem, it's the audience. Give us a show. That's the answer. Why isn't there a female, strong, funny show so the audiences can get used to seeing women as funny and not just what they look like? It's a simple solution, but I don't think the networks are brave enough to do it, and I think that's really sad.
And then what about in your personal life in terms of how good and how best friend Chris is? There's nothing like hanging around with a bunch of women.
Women are unequivocally, that came out wrong. Women are unequivocally funnier than men when men aren't around. And I think female humour is just one of the greatest gifts of all. It's completely uncompetitive and it's very clever, and it would be great to see that on screen. That's what Bridesmaids was. That's why it's so successful.
Okay, well then, commissioning editors of television, take notes. Just one last one then. When you meet fans or do interviews, people often want to talk about your husband, Chris, obviously, and I've done that. You're different to an awful lot of celebrity couples in some ways. Anyway, they don't like to be pictured together a lot of the times. You will be around all night long holding hands, and if somebody's taking a picture, you don't exactly unhold or unclasp or whatever. And why not? Celebrate the whatever.
I can't imagine being one of those couples where they don't talk about the marriage or their relationship. That feels so guarded and unloving, and like work comes first. Now, Chris and I have no problem with being seen together and all that. We talk about each other in interviews, but we actually don't give that much away. We don't give that much away at all. We say the obvious stuff that is just nice to share. So we're not like the Kardashians, but we're just... I'm not going to deny my marriage. It's the most important thing in my life. And I think there's a way of balancing a public persona when you're a couple, of not feeling like you have to live behind closed doors, but also not sharing too much of yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like at the moment we've struck that balance, and it's good. And we're very lucky, you know, we're not intruded by the press at all. We're only really in the papers when we're promoting our work.
Very good. Well, listen, Dawn, there you are on the radio promoting the work, and it is the author of Paper Aeroplanes we're talking about. It is now Goose, number 2 of 4, possibly?
Number 2 of 4, yes.
Oh, wow, you're, that's definite.
Yes, that's happening. All right, I'm signed up.
You said there, number 4 is the most likely to be a movie.
Because it's there in their 30s, and it's about, it's probably the most dramatic one.
All right, and by the way, does growing up mean growing apart?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Dawn O'Porter, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Say hello to Chris for us.
Thank you so much.